General William Westmoreland dropped his $120 million libel suit against CBS. General William Westmoreland said today he dropped his $120 million libel suit against CBS, satisfied that his loyalty and patriotism had been recognized. CBS said nothing had surfaced in the 18-week trial which diminished their conviction that the documentary which caused the suit was fair and accurate. That documentary, The Uncounted Enemy, a Vietnam deception, accused the general of suppressing information on enemy troop strength in Vietnam for political reasons. He denied it, but the testimony of two late witnesses had recently appeared to strengthen the CBS case. At a news conference this afternoon, the retired general said he considered the outcome a victory.
Now, I brought this suit against CBS to defend my honor and to affirm constitutional principles which indeed include the rights provided by the First Amendment.
Do you feel this is a win, a loss, or a draw?
I consider that I've won.
CBS also declared itself very satisfied with the outcome. Here's the comment of CBS Executive Vice President Van Gordon Sauter.
The greatest revelation, I think, to the American public is that during this 2.5 years of discovery and trial, what CBS had to say in that broadcast was vindicated. And I think that's of great value, and I think that's very encouraging to the journalistic process. I think we at CBS News feel quite strongly and quite joyfully that this broadcast, perhaps the most scrutinized journalistic effort in history, could stand the test of 2.5 years of day-to-day examination.
CBS correspondent Mike Wallace, who narrated the documentary and was a defendant in the libel suit, said the outcome is a good day for journalism in general and CBS News in particular. Wallace was due to have begun testifying at the trial tomorrow. After the news summary, we devote our lead focus section to the aborted trial and what it means to the media.
We go first and foremost tonight to the Westmoreland decision, retired General William Westmoreland's decision to abandon his $120 million libel suit against CBS. It was done officially this morning in federal court in New York City, where the case had been under trial for 18 weeks. Westmoreland and CBS issued a joint written statement saying each side now felt their respective positions had been placed before the public and continuing the legal process would serve no further purpose. Afterward, General Westmoreland appeared at a news conference to read the joint statement and explain his decision.
CBS respects General Westmoreland's long and faithful service to his country and never intended to assert and does not believe that General Westmoreland was unpatriotic or disloyal in performing his duties as he saw them. Now, if that statement had been made after the CBS program had been aired, it would have fully satisfied me. After my press conference in Washington in June 26, 1982, attended by Ambassador Bunker, George Carver, General Davison, and others, if that statement had been made or offered by CBS, it would have satisfied me. And after the publication of the TV Guide article, such a statement from CBS would have been totally satisfactory to me. If it had been made after the publication of the book, A Matter of Honor, it would have been satisfactory to me. If made during the first day of federal court down in Foley Square, it would have ended the episode. The court action has certainly exposed some of the problems and complexities of producing intelligence on an elusive enemy, the enemy that we had in Vietnam. The court action has certainly exposed some of the problems and complexities in producing a television documentary. Indeed, the court action has emphasized a number of things. Among them, the enemy's Tet Offensive was a severe defeat. The scope of the enemy's offensive did exceed our expectations, because we had to defend a almost unprecedented hostile front of approximately 700 miles along the Cambodian-Laos borders and the demilitarized zone. The size of the enemy troops committed was in line with the estimates of my intelligence chief, General Davis. Our American troops did an impressive job in fighting the enemy forces in South Vietnam and did not lose a battle of significance. Our country can be proud, and I believe now is proud, of their performance. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I hope and trust that the conclusion of my action against CBS will be a benchmark in putting our Vietnam experience behind us and allowing historians and scholars to assess the facts of that war, a unique experience for America, in an accurate and non-sensational terms.
CBS also held a news conference afterward. Here is part of what was said there about the joint statement by CBS executive Gordon Van Sauter, who was president of CBS News when the documentary was broadcast, and by CBS lawyer David Boies.
I personally do not view that statement as an apology. The important thing to realize that in that broadcast, many current and former military and civilian authorities came forward to say there had been an underreporting of enemy troop strength in Vietnam. Even the harshest critics of General Westmoreland acknowledge that he served this country for many years at self-sacrifice. We believe that the broadcast was accurate and fair. We believe the statement is equitable, and the general may read into the statement what he wishes to read into the statement. CBS News says that from his perspective, in his way, the general feels that he was operating in a loyal and patriotic fashion. The value of the broadcast is that it contains several perspectives as to how the general was operating, including at some length the general's own perspective as to whether he was operating in a loyal and patriotic fashion. I think it is up to the public and to the historians to determine which version they wish to choose.
I said in the opening statement that when General Westmoreland engaged in this deception, it might very well be that he felt it was in the interests of his country that we remain in Vietnam, and that it was in the interests of this country that people be misled into believing that we were winning long enough for us to stay in Vietnam and win what he thought was a necessary victory. If Mr. Burt and General Westmoreland had believed that that was sufficient, they should have terminated the lawsuit then. I don't think there's ever been any doubt in anybody's mind that General Westmoreland was pursuing his country's interests in the way that he saw them. I think the problem raised by the broadcast is whether it is permissible for somebody to mislead the country, mislead the Congress, and mislead the president because he believes that that is in the country's interest.
When General Westmoreland rested his case, we presented a summary of the key points. Tonight, correspondent June Massell has a brief look at the highlights of the case for CBS.
These numbers, so-called numbers, were actually people that we were fighting, people that were killing American soldiers. killing a lot of American soldiers. So it wasn't a fight over numbers. It was a fight over how much the enemy could do to us, how badly they could hurt us.
Had those figures been lumped, as before, with the enemy's combat troops, we would have seen a sudden and deceptive increase in enemy strength. And it was not an increase in combat capability, when in reality, those people were essentially non-combatants and had been there all along.
Was there an honest debate about the enemy's strength numbers, as General Westmoreland maintains, or was it deception on the part of Westmoreland, as the CBS documentary said? The documentary, entitled The Uncounted Enemy, A Vietnam Deception, said General William Westmoreland deliberately underreported enemy troop strength to his superiors in order to appear to be winning the war. The documentary charged the general, an American war hero, with deceiving the president and the public by dropping from the official enemy count guerrillas and other Viet Cong irregular forces on the grounds that they were civilians and not really fighting forces. The accusations made by former CIA analyst Sam Adams formed the basis of the CBS documentary. Adams, who had been a paid consultant to CBS, has been researching what he calls the Vietnam numbers game for 18 years. Without him, there would have been no documentary and no libel suit. He's been criticized by some as obsessed to the point of having a mental condition and praised by others for being a brilliant analyst with a high degree of integrity. In court, Adams, a defendant along with CBS, testified that one-third of all American casualties were caused by the so-called irregular forces. He characterized the numbers game as the biggest scandal in military intelligence he was aware of. CBS's second witness was the man known as the Dean of Vietnam Intelligence, George Allen, the deputy chief of the CIA's Vietnam staff. Allen said that the Viet Cong self-defense forces, labeled by Westmoreland as non-soldiers, had been responsible for as much as 40% of American losses in Vietnam, and that they belonged in the total enemy estimates. Allen called the compromise in which the CIA accepted the military's lower figures, quote, the mistake of the century. While Westmoreland maintains there had been a disagreement between the CIA's analysis and the military's, it wasn't only senior CIA officials who came to testify against Westmoreland at the trial. For example, General Joseph McChristian, Westmoreland's intelligence chief in Vietnam. Testifying against his former boss was an unusual, perhaps unprecedented, step for a military officer. He accused Westmoreland of refusing to send a cable to Washington to report the enemy was twice as strong as officially stated. McChristian said Westmoreland told him, quote, if I send the cable to Washington, it will create a political bombshell. Next came more damaging testimony from Colonel Gaines Hawkins, another member of Westmoreland's own command, the man who was in charge of estimating enemy strength. On the stand, he confessed that he instructed his staff to cut the numbers. Asked by the CBS attorney if there was any intelligence or evidence to justify these orders, he said, quote, there was none, sir. The attorney, were they proper orders? Hawkins, they were not, sir. I carried out orders as a loyal officer in the U.S. Army. Never looking at his former commander, Hawkins said he believed the orders originated with General Westmoreland. He called the figures crap, a terrible misrepresentation of the truth, and testified that General Westmoreland had told him higher figures were, quote, politically unacceptable. In November, Westmoreland testified he did brief his immediate superiors about the higher figures in May of 1967, a meeting that Westmoreland said Hawkins attended. But on the stand, Hawkins said he did not recall such a meeting. Throughout the testimony, Westmoreland remained expressionless, showing no emotion. So the answer to the question, an honest debate or suppression of the numbers, may never be known. 3 years after the documentary, and just a week before the case was expected to go to the jury, General Westmoreland has dropped his case. CBS, who contended the case never belonged in court, seemed to get what it wanted all along, a judgment made in the court of public opinion rather than in a court of law.
With us again are the attorneys for the two sides, Dan Burt for General Westmoreland and David Boies for CBS. Mr. Byrd, it's being widely suggested today that you gave up because recent testimony, we've just heard a couple of examples of it, supported CBS's position so strongly that you couldn't win.
No, I don't think that's true. We've been discussing this issue, what we wanted, for 2.5 years now. We came into court looking for a statement that General Westmoreland was a faithful, patriotic, loyal man. We got that. We took it. Remember, the gentleman at CBS didn't have a gun pointed at their head. And they gave that. And that was the crux of it.
What do you mean they didn't have a gun pointed at their head and they gave
it? They could have said, look, forget it. We think everything we said in that documentary is true. And we're not going to say anything else. And on we would have gone.
Do you consider that the CBS statement amounts to an apology to the general?
That is the first thing that was said to me by a gentleman from another network when he interviewed me this morning coming out of court. He said, got me up on one of these little boxes, and he said, don't you believe that this amounts to in effect, an apology or a retraction? I said, yeah, it looks like it to me. But I think that's something that the public is going to have to decide.
Mr. Boyce, do you think it amounts to an apology by CBS?
Of course not. Let's get a couple of things straight. First of all, Mr. Byrd says that if CBS wanted to say the broadcast is true and accurate and we stand by it, it was free to do so. CBS did exactly that. CBS issued a statement, and Mr. Byrd knew we were going to issue that statement, that said the broadcast is true and accurate and we stand by it. The second thing, before the rewriting of history gets too far along, let's remember that the plaintiff came into court seeking $120 million, seeking an apology, seeking airtime to reply, seeking to bar CBS from republishing the broadcast. General Westmoreland drops his lawsuit, getting not a penny in damages, getting no apology, getting no airtime, with CBS completely free to rebroadcast that program as many times and as often as it wishes. If you view that as a victory, maybe you'll view the Vietnam War as a victory.
Mr. Byrd?
The reason we went to court was very clearly stated in the press conference that General Westmoreland had. He went there to restore his honor so that people would see. Indeed, he was a loyal, faithful, patriotic man. Now, they've given that to us in that joint statement. The record is very clear, and everyone can judge. We have not had to spend any time explaining away the joint statement, because we're quite happy with it.
If his honor is restored, let me ask, how is his honor restored? Although CBS says it doesn't question his patriotism and loyalty, it continues to stand by a documentary which makes the charge, and as it stands, not only that the figures were manipulated for political reasons, but that there was a conspiracy to do so, which is the word used at the beginning of the documentary.
I don't think those positions are reconcilable.
They are not reconcilable.
I don't think so.
Well, if they're not reconcilable, then how is the general's honor restored? If CBS continues to stand by the documentary...
The latest thing they said was, what was in that joint statement? Loyal, faithful, patriotic. Perhaps there's some kind of reinterpretation of the documentary. We certainly had plenty of that in court. I dare say we'll see more of it since.
Why, if you were so sure of being vindicated by a jury in the end, didn't you refuse to take the settlement?
When a plaintiff comes in and says, I'm willing to drop my lawsuit, I don't want an apology, I'm not going to require any money, even for attorney's fees or costs, I think a defendant ought to let him do that. I think that...
You mean because you regard that as a total surrender? Is that...
I don't really want to characterize this as a victory or a surrender. I think it is in everybody's interest to allow General Westmoreland, who was a man who served his country for a very long time in an unselfish way, perhaps a misguided way, perhaps a wrong way, but nevertheless in an unselfish way, to retire with as much dignity as possible. I think it would be a mistake, however, to interpret a paragraph of graciousness as anything like an apology.
Why didn't CBS pursue General Westmoreland for its costs?
CBS isn't in the business of repossessing cars. We're not going to pursue somebody
to a point where we require them to pay the transcript costs. If he wants to drop the lawsuit and go back, he ought to be permitted to do that, and he ought to be permitted to do that with a measure of dignity, and ought not to be pursued, and ought to be allowed to retire as gracefully as that is possible to do.
In a recent lawsuit against Time magazine, there was a mixed finding by the jury, which in a couple of its early findings criticized Time's journalism, although it did not find libel in the end. Was CBS afraid that such a verdict might come? Because CBS itself had criticized some of its own technique quite publicly several years ago when the documentary was first attacked. Did it fear that its name might be besmirched by a mixed verdict such as Time suffered?
No, I think CBS believed that it would win on both issues to the extent that both issues were decided by the jury. I think that the jury, of course, will be interviewed tomorrow, and I think we'll have an opportunity to see at least what their preliminary views were. But I think CBS was quite confident. Indeed, every time an opportunity for settlement has been presented by the plaintiff, whereby the plaintiff required any money, even a dollar, any apology, even a partial one, CBS has declined that. If it was a question of paying any money or backing away from the broadcast at all, CBS was prepared to go to a jury and prepared to have that issue decided.
2 points. What did you consider CBS motives for settling at this stage?
Well, let me point out first that when Westmoreland brought this suit, he stated publicly that money was not an issue. Had there been a monetary recovery, that all would have gone to charity. Their motives for settling, I think you have to ask them. It's perfectly obvious that they were willing to provide us with what we needed. I think, however, had Mr. Boyce having been gracious a moment ago, it would be churlish of me to speculate and fan the flames of an already intense debate.
They were willing to provide you with what you needed now, but from what Mr. Boyce has just said, they were not willing earlier. How long have you been attempting to get a settlement?
We have had discussions, both parties, for a long, long, long time. I mean, they go back and forth. People raise them. This is customary in civil litigation.
It's being suggested that another motive for CBS settling now and quickly when it might have gone to the end was that it was about to put one of its most famous news correspondents on the witness stand, and that they might have preferred not to, as suggested today in speculation, they might have preferred not to do that.
I think
is that part of your motive?
No, not at all.
Mike Wallace, I was talking.
No, Mike Wallace was prepared to go on the stand back in December or January. The plaintiff indicated a desire to call Mr. Wallace, and we had Mr. Wallace available to go on at that time. I don't think there was any hesitancy about that. I think it's more likely that an incentive to settle on the part of the plaintiff or drop its case was before Mr. Wallace testified, who I think would have been a very effective witness. One thing we ought not to lose sight of is that the first time that the plaintiff offered to drop its case with no apology, with no money, with CBS free to say it stands by the broadcast, was on Sunday. And as soon as the plaintiff offered to, in effect, withdraw his lawsuit on those terms, it was accepted. I think the other thing that we ought to not lose sight of is what was shown on the clip at the beginning of this program, which is at the very first day of trial, I said to the jury that we were not challenging, and the broadcast did not challenge, General Westmoreland's motives for entering into the deception. I said at that time, and CBS, I think, has consistently believed, that he did it because he thought it was important to keep this country in that war, important enough to mislead his president, mislead the Congress, and mislead the public to do that.
But General Westmoreland also said, and we heard him in another of the clips earlier, that if CBS had offered him this statement years ago and months ago, at several stages he mentioned, he would have been willing to settle. Why, if CBS could offer the statement today, could it not offer the statement months ago or years ago?
The problem is CBS did. I did in my opening statement. General Westmoreland says that today. He has never said that before. That's the first time he's ever said that.
Let me get Mr. Burt's comment on that.
We never had an offer like that. And So on we went. It's very simple. Very simple. But you know, the key thing here is to reciprocate this graciousness. I think it's something really the public ought to focus on. In the last analysis, this is an endless debate that will go on after all of us are dead. And that's not the kind of debate in the very last analysis that ever gets settled in a courtroom.
Are you saying
men and women?
Are you saying then it should not have been brought to a courtroom?
No, because there was no other way to obtain accountability and accounting, and secondly, there was no other way for him to be called by CBS faithful, loyal, and patriotic. I'm putting what was stated in as a double negative in the positive. And I say patriotic and
no other way.
Loyal.
I think Mr. Bird is right that these issues don't belong in a courtroom. I said that when I was on this program with Mr. Bird 6 weeks ago. I think that CBS has from the beginning, in a number of forums, including the courtroom, said that it did not question that General Westmoreland was acting patriotically as he saw his responsibilities. And that's very clear in the joint statement. CBS does not say he was patriotic, does not say he was loyal, says he was acting as he saw his duties of patriotism.
Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Jim?
We expand the debate now with two observers who observe the issues and the stakes in the Westmoreland case very differently. They are Anthony Lewis, a columnist for the New York Times, who is with us tonight from public station WGBH in Boston, and Reed Irvine, chairman of Accuracy in Media, a press watchdog group headquartered here in Washington. Mr. Lewis in Boston, Mike Wallace said today that this was a good day for journalism. Do you agree?
Yes, I do. I think it was a good day for the First Amendment, which isn't only for journalists, but for the people of this country.
In what way?
Because I agree with what was belatedly said by my friend Dan Burt, that this issue does not belong in a courtroom. These were political questions. Everything about the Vietnam War was political, particularly including the meaning of figures and the whole dispute about the size of the enemy. And it should have been open to public debate, which is the way issues of a political character are historically, have been historically decided in this country. We don't put issues of that kind to juries. We haven't in the past. We shouldn't have now. The ending was appropriate.
You agree the ending was appropriate, Mr.
Irvine? Oh, I think the ending was very unsatisfactory and very disappointing. I believe that General Westmoreland should have let this case go to the jury and let the jury decide. I happen to agree, however, with Stan Owens of Newsday, who in his column today said that the Westmoreland's efforts to get the record straight were sabotaged by his choice of lawyers. I think the case was badly handled, and the fact that the presentation that you made earlier on summarizing the case, I think shows how badly handled it was. It was a very...
That was only summarizing the CBS case, the last part of the CBS presentation.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And it was unfortunate that this has not been answered and that this will go down, I'm afraid, in the minds of many people. These are the last things that people are going to remember. They're forgetting the enormous volume of evidence that was put forward in November and December and early January, which showed how bad and how inaccurate this documentary was.
Well, is there any question in your mind, though, that the reason General Westmoreland decided to withdraw the lawsuit was that he felt he was going to lose it?
I would have to say that that's the only reason that I can see. I don't buy Mr. Burt's and the general statement that what they got from CBS was by any means satisfactory. I don't think that the people that contributed a couple of million dollars to fight this case contributed that money in the just because they wanted to see CBS say that they agreed that General Westmoreland was a patriot. I think they wanted to see it demonstrated, decided by a jury, whether or not it was true that General Westmoreland had entered into a conspiracy to deceive the President of the United States and his superiors about the enemy's strength. I think that it's clear that that was not the case, that that was not done. And moreover, CBS, I noticed that Robin had said earlier, mentioned the conspiracy charge, CBS actually withdrew the word conspiracy after when they released the Benjamin report in July of 1982. They said that conspiracy was not the appropriate word to use. So, you know, they had a strong case. They had a lot going for them. And I think it was just badly handled by the lawyers, I'm afraid.
Mr. Lewis, what's your view on the question of whether or not General Westmoreland's honor has been restored? You heard what was said earlier.
I don't think that his honor, in the sense of his lifetime devotion to the armed services, was ever in question. The question was a particular one, whether he had engaged in this deception of the President and the American people. The short of it is that, as has, I think, been conceded by everybody, there were strong witnesses in the courtroom supporting the CBS view, in particular two people who had served with General Westmoreland and under his command, dealing directly with this problem, Colonel Hawkins and General McChristian. Their testimony was devastating because it made clear that they had had a response from the general that it would be politically difficult to report the intelligence findings to the president. That supported the CBS view. I don't personally think there's much point in us as outsiders arguing the evidence here. The fact is that the general gave up the lawsuit evidently because he didn't think he was going to win. And I think we should concentrate on what a lawsuit like this does. Nobody's mentioned the cost, the millions of dollars, $7 or $9 million it's been estimated, for lawyers' fees, years of time and effort on all the people concerned. I just think it is a great mistake to use this monstrous litigation tactic for something that really should be left to political debate.
Mr. Irvine, your view on that?
Well, I agree. I certainly never advise General Westmoreland. I was close to him at the time the documentary was aired and thereafter, and I never advised him to sue.
But you supported him all the way through his position.
I supported his position. I think the program was badly flawed. It was a terrible program, and what bothers me is that CBS is coming out now and saying that it's accurate, ignoring all the evidence to the contrary.
Well, what about... Yeah, go ahead.
But I think that there is... You know, I don't like to see these enormous amounts of money spent to set the record straight. I think the proper way is to do what PBS is doing. Next May, it's going to air a one-hour documentary on Vietnam, produced by Accuracy and Media, to criticize the 13-part series on Vietnam that's been aired a couple of times called Vietnam, A Television History. I think this is an excellent way to go about setting the record straight. The cost is less than $100,000. A wide audience is going to see the program. And it's far better than going into court and arguing and spending millions of dollars on lawyers' fees.
Well, then you were close to the decision. Why did General Westmoreland decide to go this way?
Well, I've not been close to the decision since the libel suit began.
That's what I mean. The decision to file the lawsuit in the first place. Tony Lewis says it shouldn't be there. It shouldn't have been there in the first place. You kind of halfway agree with him. Why then did the general go that route instead of the political route?
Here's the problem. I said PBS is going along on the Vietnam program. Yep. CBS was not going along. CBS was doing nothing to give another side of the other side of the story until it was clear that the general was going to sue Tony. And then they offered him a limited amount of time in a talking heads kind of program with people on the other side. That was not enough at that point. I think what we need is greater openness on the part of all the networks, of all the media, to come in and say, yeah, there's more than one side of this story. Let's see both sides.
Tony?
Well, that sounds simple, and I will agree that sometimes not only networks but the press can be too resistant to admitting a mistake or letting other views be heard. But from the beginning in this country, we've had a system in which the press, the little penny papers first and now television and so on, expresses its view. The press is not a billboard, as in, shall we say, China. The press is, we have competing media, just as, for example, CBS had its program, and then TV Guide did a very critical commentary on that program, each expressing its point of view, its collection of the facts. And, you know, we don't open up the newspaper except to a limited extent on an op-ed page to get different views, which is a good thing, but the newspaper is responsible for its product, and the television network or PBS or the station is responsible for its product. That is our system in America, and it's a little complicated to get into a sort of a common carrier where it's nothing but a billboard.
Well, Tony, what do you think about the PBS action in giving an hour's time or maybe even 2 hours' time to a critique of their series? Is there something wrong with that?
The difficulty there is this. you were critical, as I understand it, of the program from what could, would be called the right-wing point of view. There were many people who were critical of it also from the left-wing point of view. They thought the program leaned over too far backwards to be favorable to the American view, the official American view of the Vietnam War. Now, where does it end? Well, years ago, not so many years ago, maybe half a dozen or 8 years ago, 10 years ago, the Supreme Court had a case in which a state passed a law requiring any newspaper that criticized a political candidate to run his response. And the Supreme Court said, well, where does that stop? He runs his response and he's critical of someone else, and then that person gets to respond, and pretty soon the editor isn't editing the newspaper anymore. That's the problem. I mean, it sounds good, but believe me, it's complicated to know where do you stop.
Well, Tony, we've had for 35 years in this country something called the Fairness Doctrine, which applies to broadcasting, licensees. And there is a complaint, as a matter of fact, before the Federal Communications Commission on the Westmoreland program, which they have been sitting on for, I think, nearly 2 years. They've been, and this is something that could be done in broadcasting and should be done in broadcasting according to the law. Now, it's true that you're referring to the Tornello case in Florida, that the Supreme Court just threw out the Tornello case. Newspapers are not subject to that, but broadcasters are. And I think it's this is a perfect case, a perfect example, where this whole lawsuit could have been avoided if the Federal Communications Commission had simply gone along and enforced the Fairness Doctrine.
There you're getting into something where I think all of us can see the difficulty. You're going to have a federal agency. Maybe to a little extent it's been done in the Fairness Doctrine, though the FCC hasn't been very active in policing that. But
all
if
right.
you got an active situation in that, you'd have a federal agency, a bunch of officials of the United States, deciding what was fair, what was true, and that is not the American system to have governments deciding those things.
Well, the Supreme Court declared it in the Red Lion case to be constitutional about 15 years ago, a dozen years ago, and I don't know why Tony Lewis, I know you're an expert on constitutional law, Tony, but you haven't been appointed to the Supreme Court yet.
No, but the court occasionally changes its mind, and I think it might on this one.
Tony Lewis in Boston, thank you very much. Reed Irvine here in Washington, thank you.